Good Thursday morning, everybody. Hope you're having a fantastic start to your day. Hope you're getting ready for a great Thursday. DeMarco, good morning. How you feeling today?
Saw a coyote this morning, Travis.
Oh, yeah. We have it in our neighborhood, too. Was it a big one or one of the skinny little ones?
It looks like a skinny dog, like a dog who hasn't eaten. But my dog wanted to get into it with him. It was funny. It was like a rap battle. You know, they were going back and forth. It was awesome. I was right in the middle of it. I didn't know whether to be scared of the coyote attacking us or my dog going after it. But, you know, it was just weird. All the rabbits that line the street were just kind of watching like, ooh, this is going to be good.
Good. Awesome. Finally, one of them instead of us for the first time in a while. That's probably what they were. What kind of dog do you have?
A lab pit mix. His name is Waffles. Okay. My oldest daughter. We've had him for 6 years, and we said she said, what should I name him? I said, well, what makes you happy? Waffles. It stuck.
Perfect. Perfect. So Waffles, the lab pit mix. I'm assuming knowing those two breeds of dogs, Waffles is probably pretty good size, right?
Oh, you're in trouble. He can smell you from anywhere, and he's got that that demeanor. You know what I mean? He might be the perfect basketball player now I think about it.
So there you go. So that coyote, I wasn't worried about you because, like I said, we have coyotes in my neighborhood too every once in a while. And if you go out late at night for a walk or you're coming home, you'll see them around. And then they're first of all, they're not scared of anything. But what they absolutely don't want is to deal with anything that might give them a problem. So I knew that they weren't going to mess with you. You're too much of a fight for those guys.
You know, that's funny. Yeah,
Waffles I was worried about.
It cruised by and gave us a look like, what? you know?
Oh, they're not scared.
I'm not running from you, and you know what? Yeah, I've been here longer than you. That's the one I got.
Yeah, you're in my neighborhood. You see, they're looking for something that's a little easier to eat than Waffles or DeMarco Farr. So they're going to keep it moving. They're going to go back to those rabbits before too long. I'm glad you escaped.
Thank you. How about you, man? What's going on?
I'm good. I'm ready to go. I had a good night last night. I got to watch my dad. I'm going to be a dork here for a second.
Go ahead.
Are you a DirecTV? Are you a cable guy? Or how do you get your TV at home?
Cable, any way possible. Whatever show I want to watch, I'll find a way to watch it. What do you got?
Okay, because I have been a DirecTV customer for 25 years, just forever. And that's not a plug. It's just I have it. I really like it. The Sunday Ticket, the whole thing. I really like it. That being said, they haven't had the Dodgers on that channel since the Dodgers went to Spectrum. Well, they finally got it done this year. Ooh. And I have just been absolutely loving getting to watch Dodger baseball every single night. So I settled in last night and got to watch it again. And while the score, if people out there just kind of jumped in their car, looked at their phones this morning and saw that the Dodgers won 6-0, little bit misleading because this was another game where they really didn't hit. They had 8 hits, but 4 of them came in the last couple of innings of the game. They really struggled to swing the bats. They end up winning comfortably because Justin Turner hits a home run late to kind of break the game open. Cody Bellinger gets a little bloop double down the left field line. But the same problems that we've been talking about with the Dodgers going into last night were right there again last night. And that is they're starting pitching. This time, Tony Gonsolin, a guy who can't make the team, who might be the number one guy on half the teams in baseball. He pitches great, but they just can't get the bats going. It finally happened in the 8th where they added 4, but same old, same old.
Well, you know, better late than never. I mean, as long as you get more hits than them or more runs than they do, then that's the bottom line. But, you know, we always say this in football, and I think we say this in sports, winning is great deodorant. Mm-hmm. You know, it covers up a lot of stink. So, I mean, these problems that we outlined yesterday at the plate, and at some point the do theory will kick in. These guys that we're waiting to hit or we're worried about that are not hitting are going to start hitting. But as long as you keep the W's coming and you play – a hard 9 and a clean game and don't beat yourself. And just make sure when you have opportunities, you get guys in and get the W, then, you know, you can't be disappointed with that. But I feel, I mean, this is going to be a process and, you know, you can't panic. It's way too early to panic. And baseball, even at the World Series, it's still way too early to panic. Have you noticed that?
What do you mean?
Just baseball people in general never panic. There's never time to panic in baseball, even at the World Series.
Okay, so this is interesting. You're 100% right that they say they're not panicking. But having spent a lot of time in dugouts, having spent a lot of time around baseball players, believe me when I tell you, they may not say it, but their hair internally is on fire. They are in full panic mode. Look, if you open the season 0-5, you're panicking. You're thinking, I've lost it. I'm never going to get another hit for the rest of my life. If you go out there and pitch on opening day and give up a couple of home runs, you're convinced you're never going to get anybody out for the rest of your life. The old adage is never too high, never too low. Stay right in the middle. This is baseball. It's going to get you at some point. They panic. They just don't say it. It's not football where you can scream and yell and hit someone in the mouth. But it, trust me, they want to.
See, panic to me is like the ship is sinking. We're all going to get fired. That's real panic. Baseball is just kind of like, okay, well, this might not be our year. Let's keep working at it. And eventually we'll get hot and then we'll just continue that streak on no matter wherever the chips are at that point. But yeah, it's just, you know, all you have to do, in my opinion, and just is watching baseball, is just keep chipping away at it. Eventually it's going to fall your way. It's a funny sport. It's a fickle sport. But eventually, if you keep chipping away, if you don't beat yourself, if you don't boot the ball around the infield and help the other side, eventually your big bats, the people you're paying, your superstars will show up eventually. So hopefully your pitching stays relatively flatline or cool or hot at the same time when your bats do. And then, you know, look out. That's when you have those postseason runs that are just unbelievable.
No, look, I guess, like you're saying, it depends on the prism you're looking at it through. The Dodgers, they win again. They're 12-7, which is they're in a really good spot. And the Dodger pitching, I know we're focusing on the offense because they have so many. I mean, Cody Bellinger's the reigning MVP. Max Muncy's hit 70 home runs in the last couple of years. Justin Turner is about as professional a hitter as you're going to find. And they're just not quite clicking right now. But Tony Gonsolin, you and I have talked about this with Dustin May. Dustin May is on a track to become one of the best pitchers in baseball. We know that Walker Buehler already is one of the best pitchers in baseball. We know that Clayton Kershaw, at his best, is one of the best pitchers in baseball. And then they've got guys like Ross Stripling who are incredibly valuable because they can start, they can come out of the bullpen, all this stuff. Fact of the matter is, Tony Gonsolin can barely make this team. He's a guy that they're sending up and down between the taxi squad and between the major leagues, and they bring him up when they have to get a guy a start at this point because they don't have somebody ready to go. He pitches 4 2/3 innings last night, strikes out 8, walks 1. This is a guy that would be a number 2 or 3 starter on just about every other team in baseball, and he can't get in the rotation. Exactly, and this is where the Dodgers are, because when he comes out, they bring in Blake Treinen, who strikes out 3 guys out of the 4 outs that he gets. You know how many earned runs he's given up this season, DeMarco?
How many?
0. His ERA is 0. Pedro Baez, who we've seen a long time in here, his ERA is 1.04. Brusdar Graterol, who they made a deal for in the offseason, he comes in literally throwing 100 miles an hour, and he goes through a clean inning, one inning, one hit, one strikeout. His ERA is a little higher at 4.7, but that's because he had one bad inning. Other than that, he might be one of their filthiest guys. Alexander comes in, does not pitch very well last night. He was the one guy. And then Kenley Jansen comes in with the bases loaded, nobody out, and gives up no runs. His ERA is 1.13. And oh, by the way, Scott Alexander, their pitcher who did not pitch well last night, his ERA on the season is 0.00. So this is what you're dealing with. They can't hit right now. They're really struggling offensively. And you just keep running one electric arm after the next. This is why the short season with the Dodgers didn't really worry me, because you have pitching like this.
I got 2 baseball questions for you as a former baseball player. Number one, what's the closest you come to throwing 100 miles an hour?
What's 100 minus 15? So, yeah, right around there. Yeah, right around somewhere in the mid-80s. I was not a flamethrower.
I just wonder what that feels like to let that go, and you know this is upper 90s, 100. What does that feel like to have that sort of power, you know?
Do you remember the relief pitch for the Giants for a long time, pitch for the Cubs and the Padres? Remember Rod Beck?
I do remember Rod Beck.
Okay,
kind of a gruff-looking guy, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So Rod Beck was kind of a gruff-looking guy, kind of looks like an unmade bed. But Rod
That's
Beck
exactly
was a
my thought. Wow.
Right. Rod Beck was a closer that did not throw hard, right? He was a guy that threw probably, you know, low 90s at best, but located, mixed his pitches and all that stuff. And I asked him what you just said to me. You know, if you could throw 100, you know, what would that be like? And he says, well, I can tell you this. If I could do it, I'd use it the first 10 pitches of the game, and I'd never have to worry about anything else, because they'd be waiting for it every other time. They'd be waiting for it. So I can't imagine having that weapon in your back pocket to know that, just look, if I get in trouble, I can just reach back and throw 100, because I don't care how good these hitters are, and they're unbelievable. They're the best in the world at this. 100's really hard to deal with. It's
like the American sports car. It could just fly down the straight but can't corner. You know what I'm saying? But I love it. And the other baseball question, Tony Gonsolin, is there any doubt to what his nickname would be in the clubhouse?
Goose.
Oh, I see. I was going to go Gonzo. Okay.
Oh, you know what? Gonzo's better. You're right. It should be Gonzo.
Okay, I was just making sure. That just makes sense. But I love what they had to say about his stuff, his splitty changeup, which is a great name. That's a great name for a rapper. But it was just it was just gross tonight. And you know, as an athlete, when you label stuff as gross, that's positive. That's good. That's nasty. That's ugly.
Yeah, that's gross is good.
Gross is good. That's stuff that wins for you. So, like you said, man, I mean, the Dodgers, and you went back to all the way to Monday. When you said they were 11-5, there's really nothing to worry about, even though your bats aren't hitting right now. They're not hot. But when you've got a bullpen like this and you've got a wealth of starting pitchers that can do things like this and just trick people up, I mean, there's not much to panic about. But think about this. If you can continue what you're doing in the bullpen and how you're pitching, and then those bats start to heat up. Where are you then if you're the Dodgers?
Yeah, it's where they are.
Or when they start to heat up. Let's just say that. Let's be positive.
Yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to happen because even 60 games give you enough time to work out whatever kinks you might have. And it would be a bigger problem if they were kind of spinning their wheels the way that the Angels have done. And they got off to a slow start. So now if you do have a bad week or so, it doesn't kill you. The Dodgers could have a bad week and still survive. In fact, you know, I know they won last night, but they're 1-2 on the week. For them, this is a bad week. So we'll see what happens tonight. But going back to what you're talking about with throwing 100 miles an hour, imagine, like, I mean, you played a sport, DeMarco, where physical intimidation is a big part of it. That I'm able to put my hands on you and move you where you don't want to go, that's incredibly demoralizing, right? If I can physically move you off the spot, that's a problem. Well, if I can reach back and put 100 right under your chin, can you imagine how uncomfortable that's got to be for the hitter? Just how incredibly intimidating. And I get it. They get right back in there and they try to do it again. But like we were talking about with guys panicking, you can look at me like a tough guy. But if I just put one 98, 99, 100 right near your moneymaker, forget it.
Oh, we got problems. Yeah, we got problems. I got a football mentality. So let's say it's Aroldis Chapman and you – if he threw one like 100+ for a strike, I may rush the mound just to mess with it. You know what I'm saying? I got to throw it back at you some way, man. I'm not going to be the only one out here afraid. You know what I'm saying? So, but yeah, I mean, there's nothing you can do. And I'll give you a football connection to this. Lamar Jackson, watching him play and watching him go by me and the speed he went by me was just unbelievable. Or Ty Hill, same thing. It's a wonder why those screens keep working, because anybody who's over top is going to give him an extra 5 yards, which means you got room to run the freaking screen. If you can throw hard or run fast, that's always going to win for you if you're smart.
And they've got plenty of guys that can do it. Last night, Trine and Baez, Gratterall, all those guys throwing it in the high 90s, if not triple digits. It was a good win for the Dodgers last night. Plus,
congratulations to you being able to watch the Dodgers at home and not hurting your neck. Yes, I'm outing you.
I can. Yeah, we'll get to my decrepitness a little bit later.
No, not what it is. How you did it?
You mean standing up? It's not a good day, DeMarco, when you try to stand up and your entire body seizes on command. It's a
watershed moment.
It is a problem. We'll talk about my deteriorating physical condition and Joe Kelly's suspension reduced. That's the good news. He had some things to say about the Astros all over again, too. That's coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN. So, DeMarco, I'd imagine that you spent some time, you know, with the trainers in the training room getting worked on after playing in the NFL for as long as you did. Do you have any remedies for when you're getting old and terribly out of shape and you stand up and it feels like you broke your neck? What do you do for that?
Well, legally or illegally?
I'm all ears, whatever you got.
Oh, man. You know, it's funny. Me and my brother were talking about this. You know you're old or getting old when you hurt your neck putting on a suit. You know what I mean? Getting dressed. More abs, work on your core. When's the last time you've done like core work?
Move on. Next topic.
What else you got? And be honest. When's the last time you've done some core work? Okay, well, there you go.
Hold on. Let me think. If I'm being honest, it's been multiple years since I've done any sort of core, but it's my neck. That's what you're telling me, because I'm fat in the middle of my body. That's why my neck hurts.
Absolutely. Your core is weak. That's connecting everything. So yes, your knee or your neck is crying out for more core work.
See, when I was asking you for help for my neck, the answer was not for you to call me fat. That did not
you
help.
Didn't mean to suggest more work. You just wanted relief from the pain. Oh, I got
look,
it.
in the immortal words of Homer Simpson, just give me drugs or surgery.
I said illegally, what do you want?
Right. I need one of those two things along the way. All right, speaking of football, we heard from both Dak Prescott and Jerry Jones yesterday. Are you surprised that we are where we are with Dak Prescott? Because LZ and I and Key and I and the three of us, we went around and around on this. And every other quarterback that has come up to get paid got their money. Dak Prescott's going to make a lot of money because he's franchise tagged. And that immediately kind of puts you into a really high category as far as dollars per year. But it also means, at least as I interpret it, that they're not all that interested in keeping you around long term. Otherwise, they would lock you up the way that Jared Goff got locked up, the way that Carson Wentz and Patrick Mahomes and all these other guys, their team said, okay, let's do something long term. Are you surprised that we're here? The season's just around the corner, and Dak Prescott did not get a long term deal.
Well, I you got to look at it both ways. Is it Jerry Jones saying he's not sold on Dak Prescott? I don't think that's the case. I think Dak Prescott is one of the better quarterbacks in the National Football League, definitely top 16 and debatable. You can get him into the top 10, maybe higher, depending on how you look or how you feel about the Dallas Cowboys. But, you know, listening to Stephen A. Smith rail about the Dallas Cowboys, he's exactly right. It's funny. It's comical. It's good stuff when he goes after Michael Irvin. But he's right. When is the last time the Dallas Cowboys won a playoff game?
I mean, was it 2 years ago?
Or won more than one playoff game?
Yeah, well, no, that's been since the early 90s.
Yeah, see, so it's a little bit different when you're talking about a team with championship aspirations. So he is the quarterback of that squad. So is Jerry Jones doing what football people should be doing with their quarterbacks, as in, let's pump the brakes before I dump a ton of money into one spot, which hamstrings you everywhere else? Or is everyone else wrong dumping money into quarterbacks too soon? And then 5 or 3 or 4 years down the road, you regret it. So maybe Jerry Jones being the Maverick, this is what football should be when it comes to the quarterback spot, because we know the economics of professional football. When you dump that much money into your quarterback, that guy has got to be lights out because you can't pay X, Y, and Z anymore. So, does he deserve more money to be paid with the better quarterbacks in the league? Absolutely. But, you know, if you were Jerry Jones, if you were spending the money and you see what happens to these other teams who get caught in cap hell, wouldn't you be just a little bit gun-shy too if you were Jerry Jones?
Yeah, that's the interesting part about it too. And I think you're on to something here. Because let's look at the other quarterback most recently who's went through this, Kirk Cousins, right? Kirk Cousins got tagged twice by Washington. And Washington paid him a ton of money and got really nothing out of it. And then they decided to move on to the next guy. And we'll see whether Dwayne Haskins works out or not. So far, not so good. But the verdict's not final, but he hasn't looked great. He certainly has not looked like a franchise quarterback. Now, Minnesota comes in and gives him all sorts of money. They give him, $85 million guaranteed. Every last penny of it guaranteed. So Kirk Cousins got what he wanted, but I don't know about you, DeMarco, but when I watch the Vikings and I'm looking at that team, I'm thinking the weak spot on this team, it's a quarterback. He's not a bad player, but he's certainly not a difference maker the way that Mahomes or Jackson or Jared Goff on his best days can look like a difference maker. Carson Wentz can look like a difference maker. There are some other guys, but if I'm Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys and I'm just being totally sober and honest with myself and I'm looking at Dak Prescott, I'm like, that's not my guy. Yeah, I know that I might get something worse than that if I go into the draft. I might not be able to get back to that level, like you said. Let's say he's right smack in the middle. I might get something on the wrong side of the middle, but why would I pay a guy in the middle like he's at the very top? Because of all the reasons you just said, now I'm locked into this guy, and I just don't know if he's the guy that's going to take me where I need to go.
Yeah, and if you do, you get put on Front Street if it doesn't work along with the player. So, I mean, it's – look, if you're not sold on that person as a partner, which is what this is, then keep dating. Don't marry. Don't marry yourself to it. And, you know, to me, just watching Dak Prescott play, I mean, and I saw him beat the Rams up close. It was dangerous in how he played. I mean, he's a big dude with a cannon of an arm, and he can move when he has to. But there seems to be just one more thing he should add to his game or could add to his game that would take him to another level. Maybe he'll never get there, but as of right now, I mean, I don't want to be forced, if I'm Jerry Jones, into paying someone a ton of money just because everyone else thinks I should.
You know, it's interesting because you just don't know what's on door number two, right? I don't know if the guy that I'm going to go, if I'm not going to get married, to use that analogy, to Dak Prescott, and I'm going to go start dating again and looking at other quarterbacks, I don't know if there's any, there are no guarantees that I'm going to get somebody that's better than him.
Right.
I mean, there just isn't. And this is why, look, Patrick Mahomes, that's the easiest decision in the world to make.
You're not going to get anybody better than Mahomes.
No. But I'm saying if you're the Chiefs, you just go, give him whatever he wants. Keep him here as long as he wants, because we're not doing any better than that. Jared Goff, if you know, when you're Les Snead and you're the Rams, you look at him saying, am I going to find a better quarterback than that? Probably not. I mean, we took him number one overall. We're probably not going to get the number one pick anytime soon. So I don't know what it, and these are the decisions you need to make, because once you're locked in with these guys, you're locked in with these guys.
Right.
It's really hard to move on from them. It does give them some flexibility. So maybe something comes up in the next year or two. Say, no, there's our guy right there. We're going to get a chance to get him. He's our man, and they can do it. These other teams, they're locked in.
You know, it's funny, and I go back to the scouting reports, way back to the Carson Wentz versus Jared Goff decision, and they said Carson Wentz, and this is to a man, this is the notes, Carson Wentz is going to be better early, but Jared Goff later in his career is going to be the guy, the better quarterback. So we're in that phase of Jared Goff. So I guess that's to say that reaching the Super Bowl two seasons ago is not going to be the high point. I think he's going to be a guy that gets better and better and better and better. And as the game slows down, his style of play will start to come to the forefront. Remember, the athletic or the running quarterback, or the Lamar Jackson type of quarterback is all the rage right now. But Tom Brady is still out there doing it at 43. You know, he was in New England forever, and he's in Tampa at this age. So that style of quarterbacking does have its benefits. You know, you can play a lot longer than you can running around, you know, taking a lot of hits. So that's just the way the game goes. But, you know, like you said, you're not going to get better than Patrick Mahomes. But is there someone out there at some point, and just think, put yourself in Jerry Jones's shoes for 1 minute. You know, put yourself on that yacht and you're thinking.
I'm pretty drunk already. Go ahead.
Is there going to be somebody next year or the year after that says, you know, I may want him more than I want the guy that I have right now, or I could get something better or just a little bit different that could lead my football team. So the last thing you want to do is be tied to someone you're kind of lukewarm on. That's not going to work. That's going to implode. That's going to be your one bad comment away from sending your team, your team's morale into the garbage, because you were never sold on the guy to begin with. And it's so transparent. When some of these teams and some of these coaches and franchises, they dump a bunch of money into the quarterback, and then they have to say nice things about the guy. So now your fan base turns on you. So, you know, maybe Jerry's doing the smart thing, doing the Maverick thing. And if he is, well, that's right on brand anyway. He's always been that sort of guy.
I want to come back and talk about something you just said right there. And that is the what type of quarterback do you want? That decision that goes into, do I want a more traditional guy or do I want a more modern guy? That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. So, DeMarco, we're talking about kind of quarterbacks and the decision to pay them, when to pay them, how often, how long do you get connected to them. And, you know, Carson Wentz and the Eagles came to a deal. Rams and Jared Goff came to a deal. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs have come to a long-term deal. The Niners signed up Jimmy Garoppolo. We know Russell Wilson's locked up. And there's all sorts of long-term deals out there for these guys. But the stylistics that you brought up are really interesting to me, because the idea of having the guy that's 6'5", 6'6", stands in the pocket and just lets it rip and picks you apart with his arm, there's not a ton of those guys anymore. Jared Goff kind of falls into that mode. He's a big guy, and he's going to stay in that pocket, and he's going to throw the ball. And then you've got Lamar Jackson, who's on the opposite end of the spectrum, who's just such an incredible athlete, has such incredible speed, and he uses his athleticism. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he can pick you apart with his arm, too. We saw him do that the last couple of years. But is the future of this position not a guy like Patrick Mahomes, who's still a guy that can pick you apart with his arm, and that's what he does primarily. That he's back there, he's going to do what he needs to do in a air quote traditional sense. But hey, look, it ain't working. I'm gone. I'm out of here, or I can buy another second or two. This is what Russell Wilson's been doing for 10 years. Russell Wilson doesn't break the huddle looking to run. Russell Wilson breaks the huddle looking to throw the ball down the field, and if he needs to buy himself another second or two, he can do it with his athleticism. Is that the prototype of the new guy, a Patrick Mahomes, a Russell Wilson, a guy that is a quarterback's quarterback, but also a good enough athlete to get the hell out of there?
You know, it's odd. It's a great question, Trav. It really is. And football is funny. It's you're always looking to emulate. So everyone's looking for the next Russell Wilson. Everyone is searching for the next Patrick Mahomes. And good luck. There's going to be about five or six guys that try to be that guy, and they're going to fail. I think what you're looking for is special at whatever you do. You could be a guy that's a statue in the pocket. But as long as you're effective and you have the right game plan and the right protection and the right team around you, you're going to look good. So I think for guys like Jared Goff, it's not going to be there, you know, running. It's not going to be there with your legs. But what you can beat guys with is your brain. You can out-prepare. You can be tricky with your snap count. You can get the ball out fast. You can change tempo. You could be a guy that's unflappable under pressure. I know Eli Manning takes a beating. And with all due respect, sometimes he should. But one of the things I loved watching about Eli Manning is he knew when the play was dead. He would absolutely find the safe spot to dead the football that wasn't a penalty, to give your team another chance to fight another down. So that is brilliant quarterback play. Now, you can point to everything else and say Eli's bad, Eli's this, or he's not that. But that alone to me, if I could just take that part of his game and give it to Jared Goff, that would be awesome. Just knowing when the play is dead, finding a way to get the ball down and give yourselves a chance on the next play, I think is very, very important. But yeah, I mean, the league is funny, man. If you have success with this guy, then everyone's going to be looking for that guy in the next draft. So sometimes it lacks creativity, but it just depends. Whatever guy, like Aaron Rodgers is another dude. I compare him most to Patrick Mahomes, or Patrick Mahomes to him. He's that guy that can create on the fly. He's kind of a do-it-all guy. You wouldn't label him as a runner, but sure enough, in every single game he's in, he's going to make something happen with his legs, either picking it up on the first down or buying time. But look, it's special comes in many different forms. Lamar Jackson is special. He's great at what he does. I think Jared Goff, with more time, or maybe it's now, will become special at what he does. So when you start talking about the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott, I mean, where do you see his specialness? What's different about him than anybody else that's playing right now?
You know, that's a great question, because he's kind of he's pretty good at all of it, but he's not special at any of it. You know, right. Like he's just kind of one of those guys that, yeah, he's a pretty good athlete. Yeah, he can create some stuff with his legs, which is nice. And yeah, he throws a nice ball and can get the ball in there in some certain situations. But he's not the best at either one of those things. He's just kind of in the middle of both.
Yeah, he's solid. He's a solid dude, and I'd love to have him. If I was a team that didn't have a quarterback and Dak Prescott wanted to come play for me, I'd be so happy. I'm sure Dallas is happy that he's their quarterback. Well, we're talking about, you know, becoming partners, dumping millions of dollars into this guy and really attaching yourself to him for 5 years. You've seen the movie City Slickers, right? Remember when they had the two ice cream guys and challenged me with it with something, and the guy threw out beans and franks, and scoop of chocolate, scoop of vanilla. You know, don't waste my time. That's kind of how I feel about Dak Prescott. You know, he's great. Who's going to turn down vanilla ice cream on a hot day? Nobody. But when you go into Baskin Robbins, that's the last thing you look for, is just a scoop of vanilla or a scoop of chocolate. What's over here? What's the new mix of the day? Give me something special versus something I've had before or seen before.
There are two choices in Baskin Robbins, and it's either the gold medal ribbon or peanut butter and chocolate. Those are both great choices there. Go back to Jared Goff for a second, because you said something that I've never heard this phrase before, and I love it. He knows the spot to dead the football. You're talking about Eli Manning. That, where can I get rid of this ball if the play's over? Where can I get rid of this ball if there's nothing available? Because let's just be honest. At least one out of every four or five plays you're going to use, it just doesn't work, right? There's just nothing there. Let's kill it. Let's move it on. Let's get to the next play. You know, instead of, okay, now it's 3rd and 10. Here we go. Let's do it all over again. That's the part of Jared Goff's game, to me, that I have not seen yet. And the ability to just kind of recognize, you know what, this play's over. It doesn't happen, because I'm sitting in that press box for the last couple of seasons and saying, all right, get rid of the ball. Get rid of the ball. And but if I'm already saying it here, he's got to know that the play, it's not there. And I get it. Every once in a while, that extra half a second, something is going to pop loose and you're going to get a big play. But knowing the difference between an extra half second and knowing the difference between, hey, look, this ride is over, I'm putting that ball in the fourth row, I would still very much like him to improve at that. I have not seen that from him.
I'll give you a good example of what I mean the opposite way. Jameis Winston.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, not knowing when the play is dead, or you've driven the length of the field. You've got points. It's early in the game. You have a chance to take the lead, and your defense is playing well. But he starts to press in the red zone and throws a pick and ruins everything, right? Mm-hmm. And this is how I know Sean McVay is wise beyond his years, because I could not contain myself the way he does when Jared makes a mistake like that, like when he throws it behind the line of scrimmage when he's under pressure, and now it's a live ball. And you should see the way he looks like. Are you – like, what are you – me, I would have said it. I would have screamed. I would have blew up. But it's a coaching moment for him. And then you see him on the sidelines. He's very calm. Okay, in this situation, we need to do X, Y, and Z. And, hey, Jared, X play and be smart with the football if it's not there. So it's upon him to give him that knowledge so that Jared starts to learn it for himself and it becomes second nature. So – that's the stuff. If you're asking me for a prediction or what I'm looking for out of Goff this year, it's that sort of stuff, the little things, not the dynamic plays or the way he throws a long ball or anything else like that. It's just those little things, the game within the game. When it's not going right, how do you keep the game manageable until you figure out what's going on so you can exploit the defense?
All right, so I know that Karen is joining us here, and she's ready to do her traffic report. But you told me something that I had to pick myself up off the floor. I know she'll appreciate this as a Padre fan. You kicked Tony Gwynn out of your locker room. What the hell's the matter with you, DeMarco?
Wait a minute. I didn't know it was Tony Gwynn.
What?
It was 1994.
Whoa.
That's what I'm saying. When you said you were a Tony Gwynn fan, I mean, I'm like, oh, my God. I forgot all about
I'm his
this.
Number one fan. I
know.
What is wrong with you? I like you too.
You know Tony Gwynn, and you know his body type, right? He doesn't look like the professional athlete, right?
Can I just say, did I tell you that like every day I would see him? I grew up in Poway. That's where he lived. He would stop by McDonald's on his way to the stadium. I believe you.
Okay. Yeah. You know, he was a little, you know, he was round a little bit, right?
Is yes, he was. Yeah, that yes. is fair. But you know what? He was a really good basketball player.
Great dude, basketball player. How did you kick him out, DeMarco? How did you kick him out?
Just imagine Tony Gwynn with his back to you, right?
Yeah.
And he had this polo shirt tucked in so I could see some rolls, you know? Ooh. So, right. So I'm a rookie. I'm full of, you know, vinegar and you know what.
Uh-huh.
Walking in for a game against the Chargers, and I'm thinking this is our locker room. Who is this guy? Get the blank out of here. And he spins around. Right as he does, Sean Gilbert, who was my mentor at the time, goes, settle down, little dog, settle down. And Tony Gwynn looks me in the eye, sticks his hand out and goes, hi, I'm Tony Gwynn. And I swear, if I could have been, it was one of those Southwest airline moments. I wish I could be somewhere
else.
Want
to get away?
I'm so sorry.
I'm not going to lie. I look at you a little differently now, DeMarco. So, but Karen, with that in mind, with him disrespecting your guy, here you go. It's Karen Kay with traffic after her favorite player of all time has been disrespected. Karen, what do you got?
And you can ask Curtis. You can ask Jorge. I speak so highly of DeMarco. I grew up a Charger fan, and I'm such a fan of DeMarco. And when you got into radio and broadcasting, I go, this guy is so good. I don't know what I think of you right now. I really don't. My day is ruined. No, actually, that is the funniest story I've ever heard. I love it. That just made my day.
DeMarco, I was worried that when the pandemic hit professional sports, that one of the byproducts of all of this would be that the Astros were going to skate. That because the Astros didn't have to go into ballparks with fans booing them every time they came up to bat, every time Jose Altuve came up having people scream, cheater, 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 that he would escape. Now, the good news is he can't get the ball out of the infield. That's exciting. And his swing rate and his swing and miss rate on curveballs mysteriously seems to have gone through the roof. Go and imagine that. But I want you to take a listen. Joe Kelly, who we know got into with the Astros earlier in the year, Joe Kelly, obviously Dodger relief pitcher. Joe Kelly was not a member of that Dodger team that got hooked by the Astros back in 2017. But he might be the angriest one of them all, because I want you to listen to what he's saying about the Astros on Ross Stripling's podcast. This is what he had to say.
So from what I know is it goes down like this. Major League Baseball does an investigation and they want people to snitch. So the only way to get people to rat and be a narc is by saying, we won't punish the players. We'll give you an immunity to rat people out. And so the people that took the fall for what happened is nonsense. Yes, everyone's involved. But the way that thing was ran over there was not from coaching staff. It was ran with coaching staff. Yes, don't get me wrong. But they're not the head boss in charge of that thing. It's the players. So now the players get the immunity and all they do is go snitch like a little and they don't have to get fined. They don't have to lose games. They take the livelihood from people who worked hard to become a manager and axed. They take the livelihood from people who work hard to become a GM, axed. So what happened is you get people to snitch and become a rat, and the people who could afford to lose money get immunity. The people who afford could get their names tainted get immunity.
So that's him talking about this. He also had, he called him little bees. He dropped some F-bombs along the way. And he, you can tell this offends him on almost a molecular level. You know what I mean? This is the part that the Astro players, I don't think, have ever kind of come to grips with. This was not just a, hey, you picked our signs. That's part of baseball. If you got a runner on second base and he can decipher the catcher's signs and relay them to his hitter, okay, I got to do a better job of covering them up. But if you're using electronic espionage to do this and it's widespread throughout the team and the organization is a part of it, this is offensive to every non-cheater in baseball. And this is what he's talking about. And this needs to happen more. These guys need to be called to the mat. These guys need to be shamed publicly because baseball didn't do it. I love what Joe Kelly said about this.
See, is it more of the players? Is he mad that they did it? Because everybody in baseball, everybody in sports will try to get an edge. Teammate or yourself, you know what's going on. But it seems like he's more mad at the people who didn't do anything to the players, who were in position to punish the guys, and it didn't happen. So, but it's funny, man. I've talked to Joe Kelly a bunch when he was in St. Louis, and this is a completely different guy than I knew then. Maybe he grew up, or maybe it's just – environment. He's more free to say what he wants here than he was there. But, you know, I agree. The only other time I've ever been really upset with someone who was cheating, and it didn't happen to me in a game, or it was actually Antonio Margarito with the wrapped hands. I was mad because you could have killed someone. Not that you just won, but you could have really hurt someone. And that's just callous. And I can't stand that. But I agree. I'm still surprised that, you know, once you figured out what was going on with the Stros and how they were doing it, how obvious it was when you watch those videos and you can hear the guy banging on the garbage can, and it's so obvious what they were doing. And then when you compare that to how these guys are playing right now, I mean, how can you let that stand if you're baseball?
Yeah.
If I was in the game, I would feel exactly the way Joe Kelly felt. I would say exactly what he said just then.
I think so too. And look, I get that. You're talking about Antonio Margarito literally maybe killing somebody, and I get that, and that's different. But let me just put this out there. Clayton Kershaw, when you hear his name, and I'm not talking about you, DeMarco, or me specifically, but when Clayton Kershaw's name gets spoken in the context of his career and where he is relative to the other great pitchers, the sentence and the thought is always something along these lines. Clayton Kershaw is the best left-hander of his generation, one of the best left-handers ever, but boy, oh boy, was he a different guy in the postseason. And that last part always comes along. The Astros rigged a game where he was cruising. He was cruising along, and then all of a sudden, a 4-run lead evaporates, a 3-run lead evaporates when Clayton Kershaw was pitching. And if Clayton Kershaw and the Dodgers had won the World Series in 2017 and Clayton Kershaw had pitched as well as he did right up until that moment, that last part of that sentence about Clayton Kershaw would never be there. So while they didn't literally take and maybe try to kill him, they killed his legacy because he doesn't have that championship. He doesn't have that, yeah, I did get it done that one time. I did find a way to get through it all. What they did to him specifically, the Dodgers collectively for sure, all of those guys got ripped off. All of those guys are not World Series champions about what they did. But Clayton Kershaw, one of the greatest to have ever done this, had the crowning achievement of his career killed by these guys, and they're still playing, and nothing happened to them. They didn't get fined. All they had to do was sing the song about their manager and their general manager and their coaches.
Yeah.
It's deeply offensive.
Well, I know it's a different sport, but it happens a lot in boxing where a guy gets robbed and he should have won the belt and he didn't, and he never reaches that point again. But then there are some guys, and I'll relate this to Clayton Kershaw, and maybe you'll feel where I'm coming from. It's not like he didn't have other opportunities. That wasn't his only shot to be great in the postseason. So when you start talking about his postseason failures, that's not the one instance you can point to. He's been there. He's been great. He's had opportunities, just like Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning had ample opportunities to beat Florida, just couldn't get it done. He had ample opportunities to get it done in the postseason and just could not get over the hump, and eventually he did. Matt Ryan, the same thing. So, you can point to that one thing and say they robbed him then, but then there's other years that you can point to and say, well, the Astros or cheating had nothing to do with it.
And the arrogance of the Astros, too, in this whole thing, that they have never come out and said, you know, what we did was despicable. I regret every minute. It's like, well, you know, well, I mean, you guys, it's like, what? You did it. You got caught red-handed. And I hear what you're saying about Kershaw, that he had other opportunities, and he has. I have no defense for Juan Soto hitting one halfway up the pavilion. I have no defense for Rendon touching him up right before that. He threw bad pitches and he got. I get that. But much like Greg Maddux, much like Peyton Manning, like you just said, Steve Young finally got the monkey off his back with that one. That he was one of the great. But they did get the one, right? So we don't talk about all the other ones they didn't get, because they did get it, and Kershaw still needs that one for sure.
I hope we're not done with Clayton Kershaw. And I think we started off this week talking about Clayton Kershaw is not the same guy. But, you know, I hope this wasn't it for you. And if you did get robbed, then that should motivate you to get over the hump and find a way to get it done. You know, there are greats. I remember Patrick Ewing had his last opportunity and he got hurt. And the last thing he told his team was go out and get me a ring. And it never happened. So, you know, some guys just never do. But, you know, I hope he does. But, yeah, it's just, you know, but to be honest, do you think the Astros were the only team in baseball to do something like this?
I think they were the only team in baseball that had something like that set up. I don't think they're the only. Only team in baseball that steals signs. They were taking it too far.
Right. I heard something way back. Wasn't there some stadium where they had actually had a light on the scoreboard?
They've had guys in the stands with cameras. They've had guys relaying signs with Apple. They had basically a very sophisticated scheme of electronic espionage. I believe they're the only ones doing that. I do.
Okay.
So we'll see. I think your question is a good one, and I think that's part of the reason why maybe some other people were not jumping up and down. But I think at the scope and the breadth of what they had going was unique to them. All right. College football is not going to be played in the fall here on the West Coast, and that's good news for one person in particular. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.